following material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you see on a stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night.
I looked in the contract and said there may be gunplay.
Band members there, the strippers half naked sitting on the thing, everyone there is smoking pot.
Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
I'm not normal. She should have warned you.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. And man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
From Wits End Comedy Club in Westminster, Colorado, it's The Green Room. A chance for you to meet the comedians coming into Wits End, and a place where we talk about all things comedy, both on and off the stage.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Another episode of The Green Room. I am Vilmos, your host. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Want to remind you, this is an unedited show. We use whatever language we want because that's how it's got to be. So if you're listening to us at the office, please don't forget to turn us down just a hair. And listen, this week, great guest, a guy that I worked with a long time ago. He's a legend in the comedy business. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Bauer. Hello, Bill.
Vilmos, how you doing?
I'm fine.
You don't have to worry about the language content with me. I never curse.
That's
on stage or off.
That's the problem.
You know, you're supposed to say that's an outright lie.
Can I be honest here? I'm going to tell you.
May.
I'm sure you barely remember me from when we met, but I met you sometime around '97. I think it was 97 or 98.
Didn't we do a tour together in Colorado?
We worked together at in Albuquerque at the Comedy Cafe.
Yeah.
And I had heard the stories because I came up through the Colorado Springs Club, which you had gone through many, many times.
Jeff Valdez.
Absolutely.
Did you know that Jeff Valdez and I sold a pilot when I lived in Hollywood?
I wouldn't be surprised.
It was called Valdez. And it was done by TriStar Studio, and NBC actually picked it up, aired three times. If it had gone a whole season, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
Well, how about that? That's the truth. Well, that's exactly it. You know, I heard all the stories. I heard about the late night card games with Louis Anderson. I heard about
hear that I took Louis Anderson's Cadillac?
Absolutely, I did. I heard he was pissed off at you for quite some time about that.
For a long time. I told him. I said, I don't want it.
I also heard
that,
too.
He just bought it. It was used. But I said, I don't. Please, Louis. I begged him not to go in. I said, don't. I had two aces. He had two kings. True story.
Well, I know. And that's my point. I hear all these things. I hear about the party, and I hear about everything. I get there. I do my show in front of you. And after the show, we're sitting in the condo, and you said, listen, I'm wondering, can you lay off the language a little? And I'm like, what the hell is this? This is Wild Bill Bauer. This is a man, the king of the callbacks.
I forgot all about that.
This is a man that has no boundaries. This is Wild Bill Bauer. He's asking me to lay off saying fuck. Oh, my God.
I forgot about that.
Have I finally found Bizarro World?
I forgot all about that.
Well,
I should also mention that the last time I worked in Denver for George McKelvey, I walked about 200 people on a Saturday night between the two shows. That's back when I was really walking the line.
Well, that was my point. You went on to explain to me that you were changing your
act. I shouldn't have told you that.
I had heard all these stories.
Yeah,
I was waiting for this wild-eyed, hard-drinking, you know, all this stuff to show up. And I get this guy that reminds me of my seventh grade English teacher.
You know, what it was when I started out, and I was totally wild and crazy, it was me and Bill Hicks and Sam Kinison. People always drew those comparisons. And they're both dead.
to win.
You know, somehow I'm still standing. But I made a coherent choice. Things coalesced for me, and I went this way, no money. this path gives me a chance to make a living. Because I was getting down to it, there's just a few places I could work. I mean, there's only a few markets that will support my kind of really strange humor. And somehow I figured out a way to make it work for me ethically with myself, where I can go, okay, I'm happy with what I'm putting out there. I'm happy with the product I produce. And I made it work for the audience, where they're no longer going, holy cow. Yeah, and that's the secret to being happy in comedy, is accommodating yourself and the audience. Because no audience will follow anyone all the way every night.
Well, that's
so
true.
So you've got to make it work about 90% of the time.
Wow. Well, that's very true. But I got to tell you, I was so surprised at what, you know, your reaction to my act. Because I didn't even think I was that dirty. Because I really wasn't back then. I was just trying to stick my little fingers out, you know, to see what it was like. And yeah, I had a few dirty jokes. I wasn't talking about my dick or anything. I wasn't doing that.
You know, this is really funny. My son also does comedy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's actually pretty good. I mean, he's featuring a lot of places, but he's more of an actor improv comedian. He's in an improv group. He does acting stuff. And I'm more of a sit-down, prepare-my-text writer. I'm not saying I don't ad-lib, I do. But I like to have a script that I can fall back on.
Sure.
And I constantly badger him about his language. I mean, because he has no barriers. He's a kid, you know. He's 28, 29 years old. He has no barriers. It doesn't matter to him. And I constantly go, look, if you want to work with me, you're going to have to cut down on the profanity, pal. And he goes crazy. You're censoring me. I go, I have to. You're out of control.
Oh, man. Well, you are from, you are in the Twin Cities.
Minneapolis. I lived out in L.A. for quite a while.
Well,
I got a lot of writing credits. I'm a terrible actor. I got a lot of acting credits. I can thank Tom Arnold for those. His public image, and I know Roseanne is from Denver. I got to be careful what I say.
You can say whatever you want.
I mean, Tom's image took a big hit when he was with Roseanne. But I'll tell you something about Tom Arnold that will totally stun you. He is the best human being I've ever met in my life.
That doesn't
he
stun me at all.
He did not forget a single friend, Vilmos. Every one of his friends, every one of his buddies from Minneapolis, he helped out. He got me in the Writers Guild. He gave me a job writing on a TV show. He gave me two acting spots on Roseanne. I mean, you don't even have any idea what those pay or what the status was when I got him back in the mid-90s.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it improved my standing. He gave me a job doing the rewrite on his movie Carpool. And he let me write myself in. I wrote myself a part that was perfect for me. I mean, you know, that's the kind of guy Tom Arnold is.
Well, I'm going to say the only thing I've ever heard, I've always heard that Tom Arnold was a good guy. I heard his act wasn't so great back in the day.
His act was totally strange. You would have loved it.
He had a talking goldfish, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was?
And he just ad-libbed around that. I mean, and every show was different. You had to give him kudos for taking as many chances as he took, because he didn't have a script like I did. I mean, he went up and he let it all hang out every night. Sometimes he won, sometimes he lost, but you got to give him an A for effort on every performance.
Well, you know, there's something said for being fearless on stage. We got one of those guys here. Do you probably ran into at some point, Kevin Fitzgerald?
Yes, I have. Is he the vet?
Yeah, he's the vet, and he does that kind of stuff, too. There's stories about him, and we talked about this when he was on Cooking Spaghetti. He decided to go up and cook one time Elvis's last meal.
Really?
On stage, you know, and do a joke around it. He did one where he walked up, this one you'd probably like. He goes up at the beginning of his set. He says, listen, I'm doing this new bit. I need a volunteer from the audience and all the excitement. You know, somebody wants to come up on stage. He gets him up on stage. He puts a chair at the back of the stage at the corner where he's kind of out of the view. Has the guy sit there, says, listen, I'll get to you in just a second. Does his entire show and then leaves without ever acknowledging the guy again. and the MC basically has to come up and then tell the guy, look, you have to leave because you know, there's nothing happening here for you.
That's funny.
I've seen him wear a wedding dress in between. You know, he's just insane.
Yeah, and you know what? I like that. I saw him a long time ago. I liked him.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a great guy. But I want to talk. You are in an area. Were you originally out of the Twin Cities?
Yes.
That is, I would say that the Twin Cities and Denver have the two finest comedian communities in the country.
I'm going to agree with you. There's a few. There's Minneapolis, Denver, another hotbed. Seattle, very good. On the East Coast, there's Boston, and, of course, San Francisco. That's where comedy is hot.
Yeah.
And the rest of the places are just subsidiaries because those are the places you want to work. Los Angeles, New York, I've done those stages. Audiences are totally jaded. They're not honest audiences.
Right.
They see the stars, and you're just nobody. It doesn't matter how funny you are. It doesn't matter what kind of presentation you have. You're not Jerry Seinfeld.
No.
And you're not going to get their undivided attention.
Right.
But those other markets are there. They're not judgmental. Most of them are pretty open-minded. You notice I didn't have Chicago in there either. Chicago and Detroit are home to some of the hackiest comics I've ever seen.
Well, Chicago, here's the thing, the difference, I think, between places that you're talking about that are great versus these other ones. As a comedian, there's virtually the places you can work in Chicago are awful.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, you go, it's so much bigger than the Twin Cities or Denver, but you know just as well as I do, I'm sure, in your area, that you can do comedy every night. You can hook up with somebody and write somewhere every night. You can do that in Denver. In Chicago,
yep.
You're like treated like some sort of bastard child, I think.
Exactly. And I told you the story about when I worked in Denver for George McKelvey, and I walked all those people. George booked me back. George goes, "You're bad for business, but business is good." When I worked in Chicago and I walked an audience, the guy goes, "I don't want to see you again." I mean, that's the difference between the two markets. Simple as that.
Absolutely.
McKelvey said, "You're doing something different. I like what you're doing. I don't care if this audience tonight doesn't like it. I don't care. I like it." And they don't give you the benefit of the doubt. They won't follow you down that path. In Chicago or Detroit is even worse. I've never seen so many hacky approaches to the same common premises with the same result. I mean, those are the two big markets that manage to produce nothing on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and really, neither one of our cities, Denver or Minneapolis, are really located in an ideal spot, if you think about it. You'd think that you'd want to have, like, New York and L.A., where there's a lot of comics there. The comics, I hate to say this, and I'm not saying all of them because I don't want to generalize, but as a rule, comedy is awful, and it's awful because the venues are awful, and they don't have anybody calling them to the carpet as to whether or not they're doing good stuff.
Exactly.
In
Minneapolis, there's 10 guys that are vets that'll tell you if you're going down the wrong way.
Absolutely.
That'll show you how to MC.
Mm-hmm.
That will take you on your first gig. I mean, there's all kinds of people who do all that for you. I can remember when I started doing comedy in Denver and Colorado Springs, some of the guys were Michael Florwax. I'm sure he's still around.
He's on the radio now.
Steve Steich.
Not around.
I bet he's in Hollywood. He added writing credits on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And those are the guys. Gary Wilson's still around.
Yeah, Gary's working for Valdez. He's doing a lot with him at CTV.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's just so many people from Minneapolis, too. Louis Anderson, Tom Arnold, Jeff Cesario. I mean, I grew up with these guys. And more recently, I don't know if you know who Isaac Whitty is.
Yes.
Isaac had a dynamite set on the Letterman show just a little while ago. And he finds it hard to work outside of Minneapolis.
Well, and here's another one. She was last week, Jackie Cation.
Oh, I love Jackie.
A very good comic.
I mean,
a good writer, very interesting to listen to. And she had a half-hour Comedy Central Presents special. And, you know, that doesn't mean anything.
I know. What does it take? You're right. I love Jackie Cation. Does she still do The Right Way to Hold a Baby?
You know what? I haven't. I honestly didn't get to see her show last year.
Is this how you hold a baby?
Well, the thing about Jackie, the thing I told her, the thing that got her booked into Wits End was the salesman bit about her dad.
Yeah.
Going around going, I didn't go to the ones that said no soliciting. And her dad yelling at her going, what, are you crazy? Those are the people that buy anything. Get out there tomorrow. You know, you just got to love her. And you know, she's been on Last Comic Standing twice, 2006 and 2008. Didn't make it anywhere either time. You know, that just goes to show you how in, and even, you know, I hate to say it this way, how in the business is, because if somebody like Jackie can't get herself noticed a little bit more, really, yep. There's you're right. You said it. What do you got to do?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you can't even blow anybody anymore to get in place.
I know.
It's awful.
When I left Minneapolis to go to Los Angeles, it wasn't easy, but it wasn't impossible. If you were talented, you got into the improv, you got into the Comedy Store, you got on TV, you got to be in the Writers Guild, you got to act. You might not get the Tonight Show, you know, because they had such restrictive guidelines, but you got everything else. And now it's impossible. Jackie's a hero. I mean, how do you get around out there? I mean, they just don't hand out spots anymore.
No, she does a lot of. She doesn't even. I would say she spends less than a third of her time in L.A. She still does. She's still a road dog.
Well, and you know what? There's an end to that. You just get tired of it. It just wears you out.
Well, I know, and you're not a big road guy right now, right?
No, right now I'm in that stage of my career where I do a lot of corporate stuff. I'm huge on a national radio show, the Bob and Tom Show, so I do a lot of their auxiliary markets. Those are great. I did a show in this is really fun. I did a show in Grand Island, Nebraska.
Absolutely, nice.
On Valentine's Day several years ago, I left town with a grocery sack full of money.
Are you kidding me? A grocery sack?
A grocery sack full of money.
Very nice.
It was just one of those wonderful things that worked out for me. I mean, that's the area I concentrate on. But I still, if there's a club that is interested in booking me, I want to do it. Of course I do. It's the one chance when I have a little freedom, a little creative freedom. I don't have to toe the line corporately. Uh-huh. Someone else is responsible. It's your job to bring in an audience for me.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to do it.
That's right.
I mean, it's not a week off, but it's a week of doing what I love to do without having to worry about putting it all together.
Yeah, you just show up and go.
Yep, and I do my share of clubs in the summer, a little bit in the fall, a little bit in the spring.
Yeah.
And I stay home all winter. I stay home for 6 months. And then I kind of dribble the traffic out during the rest of the year.
Boy, that's kind of nice. That's you really have, and you do. You still do a lot of writing, right? I mean,
I do a lot of writing. I had a couple of CDs that did pretty well. One of them called Idiot Box, which was a parody of old TV.
Ah,
a lot of fun. Yeah, and I did a golf CD called Out of Bounds. I don't even know if you can get a copy of it.
Really.
It was one of those things that you do participate in a golf tournament. It's in your bag that you get at the end of the day.
Uh-huh.
That's what it was produced for, which I found kind of a little insulting.
Well,
I mean, I'm working on a giveaway item, but it was a lot of fun.
Huh.
And you know, no one edited me. I the whole thing was my own work, and then I did a lot of the voice work in the studio.
Cool. Well,
very cool.
You have done many things, but we take a couple breaks here. We take the first one now. When we come back, I actually want to go. I want to go back to the old days. Okay.
All right.
I want to talk about the beginnings of Wild Bill Bauer, and then we'll talk about the more current then. Okay.
All right,
folks, hang on just a minute. Be right back. Do you have a frequent funny card? Do you know what a frequent funny card even is? It's not a secret. It's a card that gives you special privileges at Wits End Comedy Club. That card gets you and three of your friends in for free as many times as you want. In addition to that, any money that you spend, you get back 10%. And you can use that money in the club later on for whatever it is you want. Drinks, food, merchandise. And how much does it cost, you're wondering? It's just $60 a year. $60. That's what you and three of your friends are going to spend to get into the club anyway. So why not get the card that pays you back? Just go to www.witsendcomedyclub.com. Click on the Buy Stuff menu item and then click on Frequent Funny. Get a card. Start having some fun today. If you want, you can also buy it by phone. 303-430-4242. All right, we are back with kind of exciting Bill Bauer.
He's, you know, I thought about the old days when we went on break there, and I don't know if I could go back to those.
Well, that's what I want to talk about.
Lots of drinking, lots of drug use.
Did you start in Minneapolis?
I started in Minneapolis.
Okay.
And let me put things in perspective. A radio guy in Minneapolis was on the sports channel. And he was kind of a nice, you know, he had a nice little job there. And he got pulled over, and they caught him with some meth. And the station fired him. There's zero tolerance today. Back in my day, I don't know. First off, I don't know how any of us are still alive. we drank so much and snorted cocaine off the tables and drove when we were intoxicated. I mean, it astounds me that we are still walking around. And we get caught, and, you know, sometimes the cops will let us go. Sometimes we'd have to spend the night in jail. But we didn't get fired. We didn't come in and get fired the next day.
Actually, didn't that get you a few extra bookings?
Yeah.
I mean,
at it and go, that guy. Ah, that's what we need in here.
Yeah,
a little excitement.
Yeah, he's living the life. He's out there doing stuff that he can talk about.
Vilmos, that's exactly the right way to describe it. I was living the life.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when was this?
That was back in the early 80s.
Okay, early
80s. I mean, you know, before that I was a paramedic, and great job. Lots of positive feedback, good money, hung around attractive nurses all day, all night. But it was nothing compared to being a stand-up comic. Nothing like it. I mean, you had it all. Everything.
Well, and back then, comics were kind of rock star-ish.
Yeah.
Not now.
Exactly.
Not now, we're like traveling salesmen.
Yeah.
But back then.
We were stars. I mean, I can't believe I'm on national TV.
I know.
I'm loaded.
Oh, Jesus.
I got loaded. And missed a television show. Comedy Tonight, I don't know if you remember, it was out of New York, and Rick Messina was the producer.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. He forgave me. But I missed a TV show. Who does that?
Well, I know.
If you did that today, it would be in the USA Today.
Not only that, it's if you are able to get on a TV show, you are thinking about that nonstop. From the time you find out till the time you get to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
And like I say, Messina did forgive me. I wrote him a letter from another comic that he thought was the funniest letter he ever received. It started out, Rick, you may not remember me, but 10 years ago in New York, you paid me $25 to pee on you.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He said he couldn't stop laughing because he had a drinking problem, too, and he couldn't remember if it was true.
Oh, that's funny. So who was the posse back then?
The posse was me, and the leader of the posse was Alex Kohl.
Uh-huh.
Alex was the head man. Tom Arnold's in that posse.
Uh-huh.
Joel Madison, big-time writer out in L.A. now.
Uh-huh.
Sid Youngers, big-time writer.
Uh-huh.
And we liked to party.
Oh, man.
It was great.
But you became good friends with Louis Anderson. Did he?
Louis was there, too, but he wasn't the party animal that we were.
Was he before? Did he start out the same time you guys did?
Same time, me.
Okay, so you guys were all in the same group.
We were all in the same group, but Louis wasn't the heavy partier. I mean, he was one of those guys. Oh, come on! But he loved to play cards. That was. Ooh, he loved that.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
and he would have a few drinks, but he wouldn't get out of control like the rest of us did. We'd all be sitting around the card table sweating.
Oh, from you got to have the windows open. Yep. I've ran into comics that did that from the old days. You'll come in, it's 2 degrees out. They're naked with nothing on, almost nothing on, sweat pouring down their head because they've just done so much coke.
Yep, exactly.
They don't know what the heck they're even thinking.
Yep.
They got a fan in the window blowing in the 2 degree air trying to cool off. Oh, incredible.
Yeah, those are the days.
So, and you actually, so you're in a card game. The story I heard was you're in a card game and you actually won his car, and then he didn't speak to you for quite some time. He was so mad.
He was mad. He didn't not speak to me, but it was pretty cool. And then one time God, this is a terrible story. I threw up on my cards.
Oh, Jesus.
But I didn't want to throw him in because I had a really good...
Oh, God.
So I somehow convinced everyone to play out the hand.
Uh-huh.
Just think about that, how gross that is.
That's absolutely awful. So what made you become a comic? Why is it... did you write when you were still a paramedic? I mean, did you have that...
I did a little writing, but what made me become a comic was I saw a guy on television. I went, come on, you're kidding me. This guy's a comedian. I'm at least this funny.
Hmm.
And that's what started it for me.
Really? And you started going to open mics in Minneapolis?
In Minneapolis, there was only one open mic at Mickey Finn's.
That's it.
And so I worked there. We got it up to 4 nights a week, though.
Uh-huh.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I mean, very quickly. I bet that's how everything started in Denver, too. You start out with... one or two nights, and the next thing you know, it blossoms.
Well, that's exactly how they said the comedy work started when we were went to George McKelvey's memorial, and they said that he started one night a week at a bar, and they got it up to, instead of going Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, they started on Monday and got it up to Thursday.
Yep.
And then they moved it into and became the Comedy Works, I guess. So,
wow.
You know, which was the flagship, I guess you'd call, of Denver at the time. You know, that's where everybody went. But,
wow.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting, you know, to realize how big of a part of comedy George McKelvey was is really, it's just astounding because nothing in Denver comedy up until 2 years ago when the improv came in.
Right.
There wasn't anything in Denver comedy that he hadn't touched.
Wow.
So, you know, but I hear that, I hear that about you, too, in Minneapolis. Not that, not from the club owner's standpoint, but there's nobody that comes out of Minneapolis that doesn't talk about you.
And you know, that's very flattering for me, but I do have to be fair and spread the credit around to... the Alex Coles and the, you know, even a guy that I don't like, Scott Hansen, he's a great big pig of a guy, and certainly has been hoggish as far as money goes in the comedy scene in Minneapolis for a long time. He was certainly influential. Influential.
Yeah.
that was terrible.
Well, no, it was fine. We knew you weren't saying influenza, so it's good. Really.
And so there's always a lot of people. But in Denver, the key figures, it was McKelvey. I can't think of anyone else. I know Ed Yeager is still around. He's producing stuff in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, there's Roseanne is, of course, a seminal comedian from Denver that set the tone for a lot of things. There's just so many people, but there's only a couple that really resonate when you mention a city.
Well, yeah.
And I'm flattered to be included in that group from Minneapolis because there's a lot of very good comics out of there.
Well, but you talk to, no kidding, I talk to a lot of comics, I mean, just in general, because when you're out on the road, and I'll tell you what, first of all, if anybody says anything about Minneapolis, your name comes up. But if you meet a comic that comes from that area, they have had some kind of influence from you. So my thing is, you have always must have always been very open to helping the other guys get a leg up.
You know what? I was, because I was treated so well by the people that came before me, the McKelveys, and I don't know if you remember George Miller. Miller was great to me.
No, I didn't. I never knew him.
Oh, he was a great guy. And he still holds the record for most appearances on David Letterman.
Is that right? So he was a comic?
Oh, George Miller was great. He was the guy that wore the sweater, and he had all those great one-liners.
Oh, I know who you're talking about now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah.
My favorite George Miller joke was, grapefruit's the simple cereal. What, cornflakes are too complicated? They're always looking for an aggressive self-starter. I get a mental picture of a guy with a key in his ass. He was great.
God.
And what was that guy's name that had his penis cut off?
Oh, Bobbitt.
Bobbitt. He had the best Bobbitt joke ever. We were working in Las Vegas together, and Bobbitt had just been arrested for assaulting his girlfriend. And Miller says, Bobbitt got arrested for assaulting his girlfriend. What's going to take for this guy? Oh, he was a great guy. And he left me $5,000 when he died.
Is that right?
Yep.
Wow.
You want to hear the story behind that?
Sure.
25 years ago, the alternative entertainment newspaper in town did a story on comedy. Of course, they got it all wrong. And they put this guy's picture on the cover, Jeff Gerbino.
Uh-huh.
And they quoted four of his jokes, all of them George Miller's. And I just went, wow. I cut out the article, and I sent it to George Miller at the Comedy Store anonymously. And I said, you don't know me, but you're my idol. I love what you do. And I hate to see someone else take your jokes. 10 years goes by, working with George Miller at the Improv in Vegas. And George says, you're from Minnesota. You didn't, by chance. I said, cut out an article and send it to you about someone stealing your jokes. Yes, that was me. And he goes, that Gerbino creep, that guy. If he knew how many times I'd hosed him. Because Gerbino went out to LA and got nothing. 10 years, nothing. Every time he auditioned for the Comedy Store, there's George Miller. I hate this guy.
In Mitzi's ear, right?
Yeah, right. Perfect. In Mitzi's ear. And then in the Gerbino finally gets a lucky break. He's got a TV commercial. He's a toilet bowl cleaner guy. He's dressed in a toga.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote a book called The Millennium's Flush. And, of course, he stole the whole thing off the Internet. And he got busted in the newspaper. This writer caught him. He took everything off websites. And I cut out the review, which was scathing, and I sent it to Miller and anonymously. And my phone rings 2 days later. It's George Miller. He goes, I'd hate to have you for an enemy. He goes, I fax that to everyone I know in Hollywood. And then Gerbino wonders why he can't get a break. Everyone hated him. It was unbelievable.
Oh, that's funny.
Isn't it?
Oh, but you know what? That's so true. And there's so many guys that just do whatever the hell they want. They have gotten away.
Yeah.
With murder.
Oh, I know.
It's just awful. So it's nice to hear somebody get what they're supposed to
get. Getting what
get.
They deserve.
Exactly.
You know, and Gerbino tries to sell himself as a political comedian.
Uh-huh.
To me, there's only one guy. Well, there's two. There's one on the left, one on the right. Chris Bliss is a very legitimate liberal comedian. He's true to his POV. He never badmouths the liberal. When he's funny, he's taken on the other side.
Uh-huh.
And then the guy from the right that I like, I always have, is Jeff Wayne, who's more of a social commentary guy than a straight political analyst. But those guys are true to, they never make fun of their side. It's always the other side. Hacks go after both sides. They take whatever is easy. They don't have any convictions, because that gets in the way of a cheap joke. Convictions are something that you either hold or you let go of somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
And those two political analysts are the guys that do it the best because they held on to their convictions.
And, you know, the funny thing about Chris Bliss is you see him, ever any kind of advertisement at all for him, any promo for him, it's all about the juggling.
Yeah, I know. And that's so unfair. I sold two scripts with Chris. He was my writing partner in L.A.
Is that right?
Yeah. I know how good a writer he is. I did the first write, he did the second write, and then we got together and pounded out a finished product.
Huh.
And it worked. I mean, we were pretty good.
Well, he's the, but you never see anything about him other than he juggled for Michael Jackson and, you know, all,
it is,
you know the
it,
stuff
it, it's
I'm
his definitive
about.
Piece. He closes with that routine. And believe me, he would love to let it go.
Well, I have no doubt.
But basically
doing Shine. Here's a guy. That's really funny how there's such a wide gap between what he would like to do and what he does. Here's a guy who's thoughtful, wants to do political humor, and he's juggling shiny objects.
Yeah. And you know where that came from? The first time I saw Chris Bliss, remember this show? This is a blast from the past. Midnight Special.
Oh, absolutely.
He was on that show juggling.
Really?
Before I started doing comedy.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's amazing.
I haven't had those experiences where I've worked with guys that I saw on TV. Ever.
Really?
Never.
Well, it doesn't happen often, but often enough. Hmm. I mean, George Miller, Chris Bliss. I mean, and when I lived in Hollywood, I used to play racquetball with another guy that I saw a lot on television, Bill Kirkenbauer.
Oh, Bill Kirkenbauer, I think he's extremely funny.
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that's kind of a McKelvey's a curmudgeon. And I remember his in-laws were visiting him, and he goes, they're staying at the hotel. And I go, you're not having them stay at your house? He goes, that's what hotels are for.
Well, he's good friends with Bruce Baum.
Yeah, and also with Dunlop.
Yeah, Vic Dunlop, sure.
I used to play racquetball at Dunlop, too.
Did you?
And he was a terrible racquetball player, but he had the best serve ever.
Well, he would need a good serve because, you know, now he's down to one leg.
Yeah.
So, were you playing with him then?
Because
I wouldn't be surprised that he would still play with the leg.
I would be surprised, too. I played with him before he lost his leg.
No. I mean, I think he would play with the leg. He's an animal.
Really?
Hey, oh, man, he's crazy. He's just as crazy as he ever was, I think. He tries to put off that he's become a conservative man and all these things in his advancing years, we'll say. But I think he's still just as wild as he ever was.
Well, the last time I saw Vic, he was doing morning radio with a hip-hop group.
Well,
how does that work?
He just did a movie called Dirty Jokes with Murray Langston.
Yeah.
And
the unknown comic.
Yeah. And that's another guy. Here's a guy that when he does his comedy, extremely clean, everything's very clever and all that. That Dirty Jokes thing is as dirty as you're ever going to see in a movie.
Huh.
Completely different. So
I wonder if it's out on DVD. Maybe I could rent it.
It is. It's been released, and I'll tell him to. I'll get one to the club for you when you come. How's that?
Oh, that'd be great.
That I can do. I'm sure he'd be willing to do.
No, that'd be wonderful.
All right. Now here's the thing. When you started out and you were doing all the wild stuff on stage, your comedy was completely different, right? Would you consider it not shock comedy, but, I mean, were you really pushing the envelope pretty hard, right?
I was. And, you know, this is the benefit of doing this 25 years, pushing it too hard. I mean, there's a time and a place to be avant-garde, and it wasn't in comedy clubs. And you go, oh, but you're an admirer of Bill Hicks and those other people. Well, of course I was. But they could build an audience. They were friendly enough to build a rapport with an audience. I wasn't. I mean, I'm not the most likable guy on the face of the earth. So, therefore, I have to be accessible. And I wasn't accessible. And that's the thing that a lot of comics who try to walk the line, who try to be edgy, don't understand is first, before they can sell that message, they have to be accessible. It has to be funny. and the audience has to like it. And that's the advice I'd give to anybody who is trying to be different, is first be accessible. They have to buy into it, or it's not going to work.
So when you say accessible, you don't necessarily mean likable.
Not necessarily, but it sure helps.
Now, when you were doing it back then, was it more of a rant?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, you could actually go into your stream of consciousness. That's a good way to describe it. Not as much as a rant is falling into your stream of consciousness. Sometimes you get lucky and you get into a lock thing, and you already had point A and point B in mind, but you could do whatever you wanted to get between the two.
Uh-huh.
That was what it was like.
Huh.
It was wonderful, yeah. I wouldn't even think about walking on stage like that today. I wouldn't even think about it. It's changed that much. America has changed. You know, before, to see something like that, you thought you'd be getting value for your dollar.
Yeah.
And it was only $5 to get into the club.
Sure.
Today, I don't know what the admission is. I'm guessing somewhere around 15. And people want to be compensated. they want to have a good time for that kind of money. I don't blame them. I do, too.
Sure.
If I go out and spend $15 on a play, I don't want to see someone who can't act. Just like if someone comes out to your club, they don't want to see someone who's not funny.
No, that's true. Who would you, if you were going to pick somebody today that's doing comedy, is there anybody that does anything, not exactly, you know what I'm saying, style-wise?
I know what you're saying, and I'm gonna pick one of your faves. I do like Jackie Cation. I like Isaac Quitty.
No, I'm talking about back then, when you were doing it. Because you know what comes to mind when you talk about you're kind of ranting a little bit and that kind of thing? Stanhope comes to mind.
Yeah, Stanhope is...
Is he the Wild Bill Bauer of today,
yeah,
so to speak?
Yep. Yep, and except he's likable. He's extremely likable. That's how he gets away with it today. He featured for me. He opened for me right after he won the San Francisco Comedy Contest.
Uh-huh.
Toughest week I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Oh, he was incredible.
He was just killing it.
What, am
in front
I going to get mad because he's so good? You got to buckle down and get through it. What could I do? I mean, he is good. He's not just kind of good. He's good. It was a long week for me. But, yeah, Stanhope, very much so. And who's his buddy, the guy that called out Mencia for stealing?
Oh, Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan, I like that guy.
I do, too, because he's got a real passion for comedy.
He loves it, he feels it, he lives it, and he's not afraid to say something.
No, he if you ever read his blog, he comes up with some of the most interesting and just out-of-the-way stuff. And
it takes someone with some courage to take on Mencia. This could hurt his career.
Well, he got him banned from not the Comedy Store, the other place, the Laugh
Improv?
Factory.
No, the Laugh Factory.
The Laugh Factory was his home
Big
club.
Deal.
Well, I know, but that was his home club, and he lost that. He was very open about talking about that, and he's very open about his usage of pot, and that he's he really likes it, and he's got one of those. What do they call those chambers? That complete darkness and you're in water floating?
Oh, yeah. Sensory deprivation booths.
Right. He's got one of those, and he gets he gets himself all high and goes in a booth sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, and then he writes about what comes to his mind when he's in there.
What a great technique.
Dude, it's unbelievable. He's, and he wants to move to Colorado.
Really?
Yeah, he's looking for. He wrote that in his blog that Colorado's probably where he's going to end up because he just loves it. So
wow.
So I just want to say this about Denver: we win this time. All right, folks, we're going to take a second break. We'll be back with more from Wild Bill Bauer. Hang on. Do you have something special coming up for your company or your organization, like maybe a big fundraiser? Have you thought about renting Wits End Comedy Club? We can provide comedians for the event, help your organization have a great party or a great fundraising event. Very easy to do. You want more information, go to the website www.witsendcomedyclub.com. Click on the More button and then you'll see a Rent the Club. item. Click on that. We seat up to 230 people. I have a great staff. And don't forget, it's the new room. So it's actually one of the finest clubs in the country, certainly the finest club in Denver. If you don't want to go to the website, do it the old-fashioned way. Just pick up the phone and call 303-430-4242. All right, here we are back with Wild Bill Bauer after I just, you know, in-your-faced him. Which
Well, you guys still got the Rockies.
We still got that. That's true. So the Bill Bauer today is clever.
I hope you're not a baseball fan.
I don't. You know what? I am not a fan of anything. I am the worst. Here's something about me that I don't even know why I'm a comic, because I don't have any passion about anything. Hardly. I don't. My kids, when I was growing up, I have three kids. My kids would ask me, "What's your favorite color?" I don't have one.
I don't have one.
"What's your favorite food?" I don't have one. "What's your favorite song?" I don't have one. "What's your favorite kind of music?" I don't have that either. I don't have a favorite everything, anything.
Vilmos, I do not even own one single music CD. I don't have any music. I don't.
Well,
I don't. It's not that important to me.
Well, it's important to some people, and it's always,
yeah,
and people want to seem to measure you by what your favorite thing is. Like if I go, "Well, Bill, what's your favorite kind of food?" And you go, "Well, it's Mexican food." And all of a sudden, that means something to somebody.
Yeah.
It means nothing to me.
Me too.
You know, so...
Did I tell you about my latest project? I'm working on a book with, as a matter of fact, with Louis Anderson.
Cool.
I mean, we were heavily involved in it for August and September. We're taking a little break right now. But 7 years ago, I wrote a series of letters, and I'm getting up as I'm speaking because I got to get this notebook, to my nephew who has Asperger's. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a form of autism.
Okay.
I wrote him a series of letters for my cat, Puka. And they were fun, and I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has to come to an end because eventually he figured out that it wasn't the cat that was writing the letters. But the letters were so much fun, I shared them with Louis. There are 78 of them.
Wow.
Louis goes, "Oh, these are great, but it's not enough for a book." So then I wrote The Tao of Puka. And it's a series of adages or pithy sayings that my cat has written.
Really?
Let me give you a couple of them.
Sure, that'd be great.
Denial can best be described as possessing the ability to plan your own surprise party. Different. People who are heavily involved in the rat race are unaware that there is a cat waiting at the finish line. They're different.
That's very good.
Accepting the inevitable eliminates the possibility of a miracle. They're not all funny.
No, but that's very true.
Yeah. Carrying a heavy load increases the risk when you skate on thin ice. The difference between right and wrong is easy to see from afar. It's when you are right on top of it that things get a little bleary.
You have a very intelligent cat.
Yeah. It's okay to age gracefully, but be sure and leave a big mess when you die. each of us has a secret talent that could land us a job in the circus. That's my favorite, I think.
Huh. Secret talent.
If your only link to the outside world is television, try not to watch the Disney Channel. That could get me in trouble.
Yeah, how about that?
There is no such a thing as a successful suicide. Courage is overcoming obstacles on the road to success. Genius is never putting up the obstacles. If variety is the spice of life, that makes routine the ketchup. All right.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, you get the idea.
Yeah, so you're going to have a
I've
whole book
I've got over 400 of those
Holy
that I've
cow.
Written.
And so you and Louis are working on that to put them together?
Yeah.
Is he writing some too, or are you doing all the writing?
He writes some, and then we agree on the phone. The ones I just read are all mine.
Wow.
But Louis, he's got a different take. But after, if you put them together right, you can't tell who wrote what.
Right.
And I allow him to have the final editing say, because he's Louis and I'm Bill. You know what I mean? Well, sometimes that's the price you pay.
Well, but you've had a long friendship. He's kind of he's kind of taken a lower profile here these last couple of years, hasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he had a nasty incident with this guy that was trying to extort money out of him. And it was very costly for him career-wise. And I think he's slowed down since then. I mean, I got to be careful what I say here. In fact, I better not say anything.
You don't have to. I think Louis Anderson's a talented man. He's a very funny comic. He certainly has a lot to offer.
Yeah,
you know?
And Denver was one of his favorite markets, and he and Roseanne worked together quite a bit.
Well, and you know what? We wrote, I don't know, and you never know how these things go, but we must have sent him, I don't know, 3 or 4 emails over the years, you know, asking him if he'd even entertain the thought of coming out and, you know, visiting our place. And we never got a response, so we assumed that, you know, he's just kind of wasn't interested. And you see any more people on the internet with people that are have good name recognition or on the internet, and you know he's got a site, but his site hadn't been updated for a long time. So I get the feeling that you're right. He did just you said what was true. He just shrunk back.
Yeah,
which is a shame.
You know he's a guy whose feelings are easily hurt.
Yeah,
and I consider him a dear friend, and I would never say anything to offend him.
Well,
because he has been very good to me. I'm the only guy from Minnesota that did his TV show, and you know that was really a good deal. By the way, most television shows buys all rights. You know, that's your when you get paid, like Evening at the Improv. I mean, I did it a ton of times because they taped it on a Monday. It paid $975. But it bought all rights. It bought all North American rights.
Sure.
Louis' show, and this is because Louis was a comic, didn't buy all rights, but they paid you for 3 runs of it up front.
Ah.
So it was $1,815 because $605 was union when I did that show. So you got paid a huge amount of money up front. And then if it went beyond those 3 runs, you got paid again.
Wow, that's
great.
That's
Louis. Yeah, that's Louis. I mean, he made sure that the comics got taken care of.
Well, I've never heard anything but nice things about him either, in all fairness.
He's a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done one thoughtful thing after another.
Well, and I've heard great stories about him, too, from you,
some
of them, which I can't repeat.
Yeah, I mean, he just is, Louis is really a good guy.
I don't know, it's a shame that he's not out more, is what I'll say. You know,
yeah,
as far as it goes, he should be. He's one of these guys. I saw Sinbad's going out on tour, okay? And I'm not even taking anything away from Sinbad. But if there's a market for Sinbad, there's 3 times the market for Louis.
I agree, yeah.
And he should be out there allowing people to see, you know, experience his comedy and experience his thoughts. And
yeah.
It's just a shame that for whatever reason, he's felt the need to pull back a little bit. So I'm sorry to hear that.
It's still very. His first HBO special is in the top 2 or 3 of all time. And there's 2 Minnesotans cable specials that I put in that category. Louis and Jeff Cesario's first Showtime special.
Okay,
are both 4-star productions.
Wow. Well. Yeah. You've had a great time. There's no doubt about it, and you've managed to be around some of the greats of comedy. So I'm actually very jealous, you know, of you.
Yeah, well, but look at this. You get a chance to bring in whoever you want. You got your own club.
Well,
I've always thought about having my own club, and I had a chance 2 years ago. This guy said to me, "Come on, it's a can't lose situation." But you know what? I didn't want to lose money in the summer. And so I recommended this other guy who went in, and he's making money hand over fist. He's not even, great location, right across the street from the Mega Mall.
Yeah, that's the, I know the
joke
name.
Joke joint.
Joke joint, yeah. Ron?
Kenny Reed.
Kenny Reed, thank you.
Very good guy.
Yeah,
And his wife is also a comedy connoisseur.
Huh.
We exchange paperbacks all the time.
Well, yeah, I've been trying to get up into see the joke joint, but he's got so many guys standing in line to get there, it's sometimes hard to get noticed. So.
Well, I can certainly open that door, I think.
Well,
I
that's
didn't even
nice
know you're
of you.
Interested.
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm interested in working anywhere. I would play the opening of an envelope, to use an old joke.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have no shame at all.
Well, you know, Minnesota's kind of a hotbed for what I would call just out-of-town comedy. I mean, there's you can work every night in Minneapolis if you want.
Yes.
And there's always work on the weekends. I mean, I've got a show going on tonight in Chisholm, Minnesota.
Chisholm. Where is that?
That's up on the Iron Range.
Oh, is that right? So that's way north.
Way, way north. And I've got, you know who's doing it? Another guy. Another great Minnesota comic. I can't believe I haven't mentioned him.
Dave Mordell.
Oh, Mordell's good, too. But Dwight York, who is Dave Mordell's best friend, is doing Chisholm for me.
Are you kidding me? Dwight York is one of my favorite guys. Great one-liner comic.
The best.
He's the only thing I want him to do is get rid of the yeah, that's his tick.
Yeah.
And it makes me crazy sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you're talking to him, but he is a brilliant mind. He does great. He should be writing that book with you, too.
Yeah, get him, funny guy.
Because he's the
he's
kind of guy.
He's got a show that I sell called Sick, 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 But Funny, Funny, Funny. The catch is it's all adult humor, but no profanity. And it's me and Dwight York, and do you know Craig Allen?
Yes.
Craig is another guy. I've known three great writers from Minnesota. Great writers. Jeff Cesario, who also gave me my first writing job on the Dennis Miller Show, is a great writer. Josh Weinstein, you see his credit all over all the good stuff.
Uh-huh.
And Craig Allen is the third guy. Those guys are fabulous writers. I mean, they just they don't even have to work at it. I wrote five scripts before I sold one, Phyllis. I wrote five that are in a drawer somewhere.
Yeah.
They weren't good enough to be sold. I mean, these guys write that well right out of the chute.
Wow.
I mean, it just it's scary.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Well, listen, now we made it to the end of the show. We like to end the show always with a road story. And I think you know the kind of road story I'm talking about.
I got a pretty good one.
We don't want the story that ends with everybody's happy and you got married.
I got a good one. And it's featured right where I'm at this week too, Lansing.
Okay. Sounds good.
Frank, the guy that owned the club, is kind of a paranoid, and he was obsessing that his employees were stealing from him. And so he shut down the club on 4th of July weekend, and he installed a action-activated camera system throughout the club so he could keep an eye on things when he wasn't there. There had to be action to get the camera to roll, but he could watch everything later on. Well, he went out of town for a week. He came back, and he watched the roll of the video, and he had enough video to make a porno.
Oh, jeez.
They weren't stealing from him.
They weren't. That's great. So what he did is he came in the next week and had everybody sign a release. Is that what it was?
He would love to have done it.
Oh, man.
Isn't that funny?
Oh, that's hilarious.
I laughed so hard.
That is absolutely hilarious. All right, so listen, thanks very much for taking your time to be on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
We're looking forward to having you. For those of you that are listening, he's going to be here Wednesday the 8th until Saturday the 11th. We got shows Wednesday and Thursday at 8 o'clock, Friday 8 and 10:30, Saturday 5:30, 8 o'clock and 10:30. So we have a 5:30 show. Did you know that?
Well, now I do.
Well, a lot of guys
I didn't look at my stuff close enough. Yeah, no, that's fine. I don't care.
A lot of these guys think the 5:30 show is the curse of death, you know, because the old saying, there is no funny when it's sunny.
Yeah.
But our 5:30 show rocks every week.
Oh, great.
So if people that, and I don't know, usually you think the guys that are coming out early, they want to get to bed early or too uptight and all that stuff. Not the case. Our 5:30 shows are great. So you folks that want to get in early or want to have dinner afterwards, 5:30 is a great thing. So 5:30.
Bill Moss?
Huh?
Is the opening act clean?
Shit. You know what? I don't know. I don't book that. But you know what? If he is clean, I'll make sure I come in and do 15 in front of you every night. If that'll be of any help. So listen, folks, you come down and see Bill this weekend. I'll tell you what, just for you guys, he's going to be doing lines of coke off the back of some coke whore we can bring in just to go back to the old days. Right, Bill?
Flashback night.
All right, so listen, thanks very much for listening, folks. We appreciate it. As I always tell you, don't forget, see your comedy live. That's the way it's meant to be done. If you can't make the Wits End, go to a comedy club near you. Thanks very much.